Let's take a listen.
May peace be upon you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. At the beginning, I'd like to congratulate all of you, and I'd like to congratulate the Lebanese in general. I'd like to congratulate our Arab and Islamic Ummah. This day is a great day. This anniversary, this national anniversary, is a big anniversary. It is the anniversary of the resistance and liberation. And this is the occasion, the commemoration of the victory of the resistance. It is the commemoration of the victory of the blood against the sword. It is the commemoration of the victory of will and determination and sacrifice. And today also, at these hours, at this very time, we are also bearing witness to a very positive ending for a very painful incident. We have verified just moments ago that the Lebanese who were kidnapped are now in Turkish territories, and they are getting ready to head to the Beirut airport, the Rafiq Hariri airport. I'd like to begin from this incident, this experience, and from there I will speak about the occasion, the commemoration of the resistance, the anniversary of resistance, the challenges we are facing, the situation in the country at the time which I have, or during the time which I have. Of course, at the beginning, it is the moral duty, it is our moral and ethical duty to express our thanks, first of all, to God, to Allah, because of the mercy of Allah, the will of God, this ending came about, this positive ending. God, of course, allowed for things to end this quickly, brought about this ending without any negative repercussions. On the contrary, there were positive repercussions, God willing. Also, whoever doesn't thank the Creator must thank the others as well. I express my thanks in the name of you all and in the name of the families who are concerned with this incident. I express my thanks to all of those who contributed and helped and showed concern and led us to these positive and good results ever since the beginning. If we speak by time, ever since the beginning, when the pilgrims were kidnapped, we held our contacts. We contacted the Syrian leadership and the Syrian authorities. And the Syrian authorities, since the opening moments, they were very concerned. They took care of the women and the old men who were released on the very same day. They provided them with the care and with security protection. And also, they, after the directions which were issued, or upon Bashar al-Assad's instructions, a plane was prepared in order to transport the women and those who were with them very quickly at that night. And this was very good. This contributed in calming things down. And we also witnessed the return of the women at that night. From here, I'd like to begin by expressing my thanks to the Syrian leadership, to President Bashar al-Assad, for this gesture and for his care. This was from the very beginning. From the beginning, the state, its officials, its politicians, they took responsibility. Many of the political Lebanese political leaders also worked in order to, they used their contacts, they pursued all the efforts, and they contacted, they cooperated, and there was comprehensive real national cooperation. By this cooperation, we reached this result, and so it's my duty here as well to express my thanks. And here we must memorize the sequence. First of all, the President, Michel Suleiman, Iran, and also we express our thanks to Parliament Speaker Nabih Birri, and also we express our thanks to Prime Minister Najib Mikati, and also to Prime Minister Saad Hariri, or former Premier Saad Hariri, because we know that Saad Hariri pursued a lot of efforts, special unique efforts in this perspective. And we also express our thanks to all of those who contacted and used their contacts in a positive and excellent way. What the people achieved now, or what these people just did now, this cheering which we heard, is not in agreement with our behavior. We might disagree when it comes to politics. However, anything good must be thanked. Also, on the regional level, contacts were also held, and we express our special thanks to the Turkish officials and the Turkish government for their cooperation as well in this issue, whether it be the Prime Minister, Mr. Erdogan, or the Foreign Minister, Mr. Oglu. Everybody who had a role in making the contacts, we thank them. We highly value their humanitarian efforts and their moral efforts. We must also thank the families for their positive response, for putting up with the difficulties. Of course, some people spoke on the media and tried to create a difficult atmosphere in the media, but what we need is patience, wisdom, a very sensitive, delicate approach if you want to reach a positive result. I must also express my thanks to the people who calmed themselves down, who restrained themselves and responded to the call for self-restraint and discipline and wisdom and patience. And here, I would like on this occasion to point out, before I go back to this incident and focus on it a little, I'd like to say that the attack on the other pilgrims in Iraq, which led to the fall of a number of martyrs, women, Lebanese women, and a number of wounded as well, we also thank our brothers, our colleagues in Iraq. We thank the politicians and the Iraqi government for their care as well, their care for our wounded. And I also know, I received information that Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki will provide a special plane for the wounded and the other pilgrims to come back by the airplane from Baghdad to Beirut. And so I express my thanks to the Iraqi officials and the Iraqi government for their care and for this gesture. These events, I'd like to stop and highlight these events before I speak about the occasion of Liberation Day. I'd like to say something to the people, and I'd like to say something to the kidnappers, and I'd like to say something to the state. And after saying something to the state, I'll speak about the occasion of Liberation Day. First of all, to the people, to our people, to our beloved, this experience, we must stop on it, focus on it. From the very beginning, people, of course, went down to the streets, they got angry, and this might repeat, such incidents might happen again, we hope they don't. However, in order to be vigilant from now, there is no meaning when you go down to the streets, there's no meaning to blocking the roads, it's meaningless. And what is even worse is to attack the cars or attack private or public property. What does this benefit? What's the benefit of this? On all measures, it's forbidden. For the people who really care religiously, it's forbidden. For those who are ethical, these acts are ugly acts, and on all legal standards and humanitarian standards, it's not acceptable. When you go down to the street, who do you pressure? The kidnappers aren't here in Lebanon. The incident has nothing to do with the roads, nor with the people, nor the cars. Something else, which I must stress,
يعني صاير في موضة هون بالبلد.
There is some kind of a trend in the country which began in 2005 specifically. Whenever anything happens, Syria or Syrians have, when they have something to do with it, the Syrians in Lebanon are attacked, are assaulted. The Syrian labor workers are attacked. What is very strange is that these Syrian labor workers, these people, they're living amongst us, they're with us, they're in our villages and they're in our cities, and an incident occurs where they have nothing to do with it whatsoever, but regardless, they are attacked, they are assaulted. This is also something religiously forbidden, and it is a crime ethically, and it's a very ugly act. What do these people have to do with these incidents, whether they be laborers or normal Syrian citizens or even refugees? They have nothing to do with these incidents. So it's unacceptable for anyone to behave in such a way, such an unethical and inhumanitarian way, inhumane way. The discipline which people showed, we expressed thanks to them for this discipline. We highly respect this discipline, and we have confidence in these people. We know that this is the nature of our people, and we hope they will always live up to these standards. Also to those people and to the private sector, let me say something. The people who are responsible for the pilgrimage visits in Iran or in Iraq, at this time they must give us some mercy, and I join my voice. I share the same concern of the Higher Shia Council and the other organizations which announced the stance. There is no need for such pilgrimages or pilgrimage visits by land. It's a very sensitive, difficult period. The situation, the issue first and foremost, is the security and life of the pilgrims and their dignity. But it's not only about this, because it's not about people who are kidnapped only. These kinds of events could have very dangerous repercussions, which could lead to sedition, could lead to other more serious incidents. This time people show discipline, but next time we don't know what will happen. And so we sincerely hope nobody put the pilgrims or the people or the country in a confrontation in confronting such dangers or such repercussions. We have the Beirut airport, we have flights from Beirut to Baghdad, we have flights from Beirut to the holy city of Najaf, we have flights from Beirut to Tehran, from Beirut to Mashhad. People can go by airplane, can visit, can make the visits and come back safely. And anyone responsible and who insists from now on to take people by land, he takes responsibility. I hold such people responsibility religiously and on all levels. They're responsible. We are confident in those people who are responsible for the pilgrims and for the pilgrimage visits, and we hope they respond positively, and the people are also concerned to show vigilance and attention. There must be complete commitment to this issue so that nobody would then take us or drag us into a problem like the problem which we were about to be dragged into were it not for the responsibility and wisdom shown by all sides. I have something to say to the kidnappers as well. Of course, what you did was condemned and is condemned. And they acted with wisdom, they responded to the mediation. This is something good, and we hope that people will always act in this way. However, I'd like to draw your attention to something. Kidnapping innocent people and assaulting people, attacking people in this way, this is something which tarnishes your own image. It tarnishes. It's harmful to everything you allege. It's harmful to everything you say you're doing. If the aim, there are two assumptions here. If the aim is to put pressure on our political stance, like expressing the opinion which you said to the kidnappers and to the pilgrims, this won't have any effect. Our political stance towards the events in Syria is based upon firm principles from a strategic vision. It's also based upon our evaluation of the region. It's based upon a very clear analysis of the threats and the events and the projects. And so We, in Syria, we support dialogue, we support reforms, we support national unity, and we support an end to any kind of armed confrontation, and we support addressing the problems politically for the sake of Syria, for the sake of its future, for the sake of its status, for the sake of its people, and for the sake of Syria's safety, and for the sake of its and for the sake of Syria's safety and for the sake of its strength. And so, if the aim of kidnapping Lebanese is to have an effect on our political stance or the stance of our allies, from this angle, this is something which won't benefit, which won't have any effect, because when we make a stance, we are ready to sacrifice for the sake of this stance, because this stance is based upon our principles, and with this stance we are sacrificing for the sake of what is more important. The second assumption, which was a serious attempt, was we kidnap, they're trying to kidnap Lebanese, and you, Lebanon, put pressure on the Syrian regime, on the Syrian authorities, so that the Syrians would free prisoners and exchange them for the Lebanese pilgrims. I'd like to tell you, previously this didn't have any benefit, didn't have any effect, and now it won't have any effect. The authorities in Syria are not in the process of opening this door, nor are we in the process of entering into such a problem. And there was a very unfortunate experience just weeks ago in the Qusair district, whereby two Lebanese were kidnapped, two Lebanese who live in Syrian territories, they were kidnapped by armed groups, and they demanded, the kidnappers demanded, if you want to retrieve these two Lebanese people, if you want their return, you must demand from the Syrian authorities to release person X and person Y. This is a very dangerous door if you want to open the door in this way. Now, there was no response, and the Syrian authority is not in the process of taking such a step, and the contacts failed, and so the tribes and the families of two of these two Lebanese citizens then went ahead and kidnapped other people from the armed groups, and then the exchange happened between both sides. So this experience is a failed experience. It's a failure. And we hope that this isn't repeated, because it won't have any impact, it won't have any benefit politically, nor will it have any impact from a security perspective, nor will it lead to any such prisoner exchange. And we also hope that nobody use violence against the Lebanese, because in the end, violence will only lead to more violence. Now I'd like to speak about the state. This experience which we witnessed today is a very good experience. From the very beginning we said the responsibility is that of the state. The state has responsibility. And the state and the government, they must take their responsibility, and the political leadership and the political factions, we all support the efforts of the government and the efforts of the state. And this is something good. Originally, at the beginning, some people said that this is a very good start from us. No, it's not a start. This is an old path which we have been walking on. It's an old path. And from here, I'd like to speak about the South and about Lebanon and about the confrontation with Israel and about the resistance and about the occasion. Ever since the establishment of the Zionist entity in 1948 on the Lebanese territories, or sorry, on the Palestinian territories, the Israelis always launched attacks on Lebanese territories. They attacked the Lebanese people, the Lebanese villages, the Lebanese farmers, and ever since 1948, the Israeli enemy entered via the border, entered into villages, entered into the bases of the security services, and attacked the army, and kidnapped army men, and kidnapped civilians, kidnapped people, committed massacres. And those who forget history can go back to the archives. There are villages whereby massacres occurred, whereby we had 80 martyrs, 100 martyrs, or 120 martyrs. This all happened before the 1970s. This happened before the Palestinian resistance factions came to Lebanon. Now,
أهل الجنوب,
the people of the south and the leaderships in the south, the religious leaders and the political leaders in the south, ever since Abd Hussein Sharif al-Din, may peace be upon his soul, and the other religious clerics, what did they say? They said, you, the state, you must come and defend the south. Come and defend the borders. Come and prevent the attacks. Prevent the assaults on the Lebanese, against all Lebanese. However, the state didn't respond to all of these calls. Imam Musa Sadr, may God bring him back to us, and may God bring him back to us together with his two colleagues. When he came to Lebanon in 1960-1961, and ever since the beginning of his political life in Lebanon, look at what he used to say from the beginning. He said, we want the army to go to the borders to protect the south, not to protect Israel. We want the army to go to protect the people, to defend the people. We want the state to be present. He said also, we want you to train the people of the south. We want you to arm the people of the south. We want you to organize the people of the south so that the people, together with the army, can defend the south. However, the state didn't respond. The state didn't respond. The state was in another planet. Let me say, the political authority. The political authority was always in another planet. The political authority in Lebanon didn't adopt a strategy of defending the South and defending the people of the South, or of defending Lebanon and the people of Lebanon. No, the Lebanese political authority adopted the theory of Lebanon's strength lies in its weakness. It adopted the policy of neutrality. This might be understood if we be neutral towards the Arab-Israeli conflict. However, do you make yourself neutral when it comes to defending your own territory, defending your people, defending your villages, defending your army, your policemen, your security bases, your infrastructure? This is what was there before. This is what happened before. And for this reason, Imam Musa Sadr, who was one of the strongest supporters of the state taking its responsibility and for the army standing in the front lines to defend Lebanon, for this reason, he was one of the strongest supporters of forming Lebanese resistance. And he called for people to take up arms and to buy arms. And he also called on the people to sell some of their property to buy arms to defend themselves. And he bought arms as well. So, when we speak today about the popular resistance, we must remind everyone, and we must record here that the Lebanese people, and especially the people of the south and the southern villages, or the frontline villages in the south and the western Bekaa, they were obliged to buy arms and to take up arms, and they were obliged also to take up this national duty in light of the absence of the Lebanese political authority, complete absence. More than absence, it was even bigger than absence. Let me be very clear here, but let's be calm at the same time. It was more than absence, but let me speak here about absence. Now, if the state doesn't protect the people, doesn't protect the territory, if the state doesn't take its responsibility of liberating what was occupied in the aftermath after the 1967, the Shuba Farms and the Kfar Shuba Hills, or in 1978 or in 1982, people do not abandon their duty, their national duty or their religious duty, their nationalistic duty. This is a situation when we have people of dignity. They don't abandon their duty. They don't abandon or give in their dignity. They don't give up their legal proper, what belongs to them legally. And so for this reason, the resistance was launched in Lebanon. The resistance was launched in Lebanon in its popular vision, in its popular way. And it reflected itself by parties, by organizations, by movements, by other bodies, and the Palestinian colleagues, our Palestinian brothers, also had a very important role in this resistance. The Palestinian factions, the Palestinian Mujahideen factions, and the popular support. And so hence we witnessed this resistance, which slowly grew its efforts, expanded its achievements, increased until we reached the big victory on the 25th of May, year 2000, which has now become a national anniversary, an anniversary for resistance and liberation and victory. So based upon this, with respect to all of the previous stages, we must say that we always stressed and we always called for the state to take its responsibility, and we all stand with the state, behind the state, right next to the state, and if the state wants, we'll stand in front of the state, in confronting and in martyrdom and in sacrificing. We are ready. However, when there is no responsibility, when the state doesn't take responsibility, people then take their responsibility. So from here, I'd like to speak about the occasion to say that yes, today we are witnessing a real national anniversary, and I call for making this a national holiday for all of the Lebanese people, for the state, for the army, for the institutions, for the Lebanese people, for all of the Lebanese political factions, especially the political parties and the organizations and the groups and the movements which participated and fought. What's the problem? Today we celebrate, tomorrow our colleagues in the Amal movement will have their own celebration in Khiyam. There are other political parties and organizations in their respective areas and cities. They make their own celebrations. Celebrations will fill the country, and it's the right, especially all of the parties and the factions and the groups and the movements and the organizations which contributed to this resistance and fired bullets as part of this resistance and for sacrificed martyrs for this resistance, and especially those movements who had prisoners who were imprisoned as part of this resistance, those who had wounded as part of this resistance. All of those movements and groups have the right to celebrate because they are partners. This is an anniversary for all of the families of the martyrs, for all of the prisoners, for all of those who were liberated, for all of the wounded, for all of those who were displaced from their homes, for all those whose homes were destroyed, for all those who showed perseverance and stood in their territories, for all those who contributed and helped and supported and protected by their word, by their pen, by their stance, by poetry, by prayer, by sympathy, whether it be before or after or in the future, even those who stood with this resistance in July 2006 war. This is the anniversary for everyone, and we really want it to be as such, and we don't want anyone to make this anniversary an anniversary for one specific sect or one specific group or one specific organization. No, this is a real national anniversary. It's a real national victory. And ever since day one, on the 25th of May, when we celebrated in Bint Jbeil, in the sports ground, and when I was at your service at that time live, and when we spoke, I said this was the victory of Lebanon, all of Lebanon. And now on the 12th anniversary, we say once again, this is the victory of Lebanon, all of Lebanon, and this is an anniversary for all of the Lebanese, and we want it to be as such. The second point with respect to the occasion, here I'd like to speak about the achievement and about the cause. The theme, which I don't want to speak about only for the sake of history, but also for the sake of the present, something I want to say in the speech is that the resistance is an achievement, first of all, and it's a cause, second of all. When I say resistance, this means its decision, its will, its right, its legitimacy, its men, its people, its arms, its readiness. This is the resistance. Now, when we speak about the achievement, and then we'll speak about the cause, of course, I want to speak about all of this. I'll speak about why I'm mentioning these issues. When we speak about the achievement, we can say on the level of the region, everybody knows that the year 1982, after the Israeli invasion, there was a project, an American-Israeli project for Lebanon and for the region, and there was a project to crush crush or destroy the Palestinian project. There were goals related to the settlement in the region, Lebanon, Palestine, and Syria. I won't take all the time. You all realize what was happening at that time. The resistance, which was quickly launched in Lebanon and confronted the occupation in 1982, it overthrew this American-Israeli project on the level of the region. And then the region entered into a new era. On that day, it was said that Lebanon has entered into the Israeli era. However, just within months, it became clear that Lebanon has begun to exit this Israeli era. But now, let's speak about the tangible results. Now, you are present, you are here on the border, very close to the borders. And if I speak about what happened in 1982 and the American-Israeli project and the aim American-Israeli project and the aims of the Israeli invasion and what the settlement was, what the settlement they wanted to impose. Maybe some people might remember, but there's a generation which wasn't present at that time. Let's speak about the tangible results or tangible repercussions of the achievement. This territory where you stand now, this was occupied territory. Some of it was occupied since 1978 and some of it was occupied ever since 1982, meaning after the Israeli withdrawal from Sidon and Tyre and Nabatiyeh and the formation of the so-called line at that time. Separation line. The territories were given back to their people. This is a tangible achievement. The project for the Israelis was not to give this territory back. The Israelis didn't enter Lebanon to withdraw from Lebanon. The Israelis have agreed with respect to Lebanon and its territory and its water. The documents, there are documents, there's no time for me to read them. However, documents prove this. Documents verify and prove that Israel's have agreed towards Lebanon, the beginning when the region was being formed, and after the establishment of a Zionist entity in 1948, Israel's eye was on part of Lebanon, at least on South Lebanon. This was Israel's greed. Israel, how will the situation stabilize in the south? The Israelis in the south in 1982, and based upon the sense between the Lebanese and some Palestinian factions, the Israelis relied upon the fact that the people of South Lebanon will be calm and will be cooperative, and so the Israeli army would remain. Quick resistance from the Lebanese against the occupation and the martyrdom of Ahmed Qasir in Tyre and the vision of this, the territories of South Lebanon won't be a safe place for the occupying forces or the occupation project. What is tangible today is the Shuba Hills and part of the Ghajar village. So this territory has come back to us with dignity and without any king's territory, has been given back to its rightful owners, the homes, the farms, the orchards, everything. It's all been given back also to the sovereignty of the state, to the political authority. We all know in Camp David how the Sinai was given back to Egypt. It was kind of put in Sinai, how many weapons can enter Sinai, what type of weapons, the amount of weapons in Sinai, in the Sinai Peninsula. The achievement in Lebanon is that territory was given back to Lebanese sovereignty completely. Today, the Lebanese government is the one which decides who it sends from the army, how many regiments, how many contingencies, what type of weaponry. Nobody has the right to object and to argue. And the Lebanese state can be present in any inch of the Lebanese sovereign territories. And it doesn't need to. Has come back to this territory. This is a tangible achievement. Today, we are present in our territories and in our villages. The people are living in security. In the year 2000, was overthrown very quickly. And we must thank God for this. You know, maybe this wasn't spoken of before. I'm not sure if it was spoken of before. Why did the Israelis withdraw quickly? Why didn't the Israelis inform Antoine Lahad and the Lahad army of their withdrawal? Do you know why? They withdrew quickly. They left the Lahad army in the streets, in the bases, in the villages. They were lost, and they thought that a civil war would occur in Lebanon. There would be a sectarian war in Lebanon. To our people in South Lebanon, to all of the people who worked in the Lahad army, to you the Lebanese, can you please listen very carefully? The Israelis whom you served for tens of years, they want your children to become orphans. They wanted you to be the wood of a sectarian war so that the Lebanese celebration would become a funeral and you would have been the funerals. They made a conspiracy against you. However, front lines right on the border, those who suffered so much from the Lahad army and from the crimes of the Lahad army and from its bombs and from the Qiyam prison and from the torture and from the Lebanese spies who worked for Israel, all those families who suffered from the spies, nobody must speak in this way. Those people did their duty from the ethical, especially to those who dealt or worked with the Israelis for tens of years. The Israelis, I'd like to tell all of them, the Israelis, you, like sandbags, and they left you then. They left you alone, and they left you to be killed. They left you so that you could be the wood which lights up. It has Muslims, it has Christians, it has Shia, Sunni, Druze, Christians from different affiliations, from different Christian sects, and so they all live with one another. So it's like a small Lebanon. They've lived with each other ever since year 2001. Nobody has forced anyone out of his house. Nobody made any demographic change. And this happened with the presence of the arms of the resistance. Even those people who resorted or fled, name it what you want, who fled to occupied Palestine, nobody demanded that they flee. Ever since day one, it was clear the behavior, the performance, the stance was that don't take any violence against these people, the women, the mothers, the wives, the children, the daughters, the families, the fathers, the mothers, those who weren't involved with the Israelis, nobody will do any harm to them. Even if they were the wives of high-ranking spies, and the spies themselves, from the very beginning, it was clear that we won't kill anyone. There is a Lebanese judiciary, a Lebanese state will hold them accountable. They are the ones who fled. And ever since that time, we say to the families, you can come back. This doesn't need any agreement. You can come back. Wives or children, young, old, you can come back. Those who weren't involved in spying, they can come back. But those who were involved in spying, there is a Lebanese state and there is a judiciary. You also saw how the judiciary was dealing very easily with this issue. So nobody wanted to bring about any change in the South. The resistance, with all of its factions, wanted good for the South and for its people. It wanted to seal this wound, and the resistance wanted the people of the border areas to live with each other in peace, in love, in stability, with cooperation, and everything which further promotes and enhances this coexistence, which further enhances this civil stability, this cooperation. We are always ready for it, God willing. So this is also an achievement. It's a tangible achievement which we can feel every moment, every hour. There are some who might not feel this achievement. However, those who were under occupation, they can feel it. The checkpoints today, you go through the checkpoints, we have a Lebanese army or Lebanese security services. They're your people, they're your fellow countrymen, they respect you. Then we go to the other achievement, the subject of, and then we'll speak of the important matter, protecting the South, protecting Lebanon, protecting the people, protecting the state, protecting the country from Israeli greed, from the Israeli threats, from the Israeli attacks. Here, with respect to protecting in the liberation, there is the resistance. When it comes to protecting, the equation is army, resistance, people. Now, let's take a look. This equation, has it brought about an achievement or not? Sometimes we make poetry, we speak about theories. Let me speak in a very casual way, like the people of villages. We go to the villages and we ask the people of the villages, this equation, has it brought about an achievement or not? Has it protected the borders? Yes. Is it protecting the people on the borders? Yes. The people, now you are all, you can go day and night, you can travel along the border, you can travel along the so-called wall, we'll speak about this, you can travel day and night, people are always moving, are traveling, they go down to their fields, they go to their schools, yes. They do all of this. Where are the homes being built now? Not on the front lines, right on the border. Right on the border fence, the houses are being built. What does this show? It shows that people feel secure. It shows that people feel protected. It shows that there is confidence in being protected. Not only that we are protected, no, people are confident that they are under protection, that they're being protected. This story. So, ever since the 25th of May, the year 2000, until the 12th of July, 2006, the 14th of August, please look at this period, from the 14th of August, the end of the July 2006 war, until now, the Israelis don't have the courage to attack Lebanon and the Lebanese. What's the problem today? It's about a violation here. The army stood against them there. They violated 5 meters, 50 meters. The United Nations then comes. They keep us preoccupied. They speak about a blue line, a green line. I don't know what. This is the whole issue now. Remember what used to happen before, from 1948 until the year 2000. The Israelis used to bomb villages. They used to open, the snipers used to target farmers. They used to displace the villages, attack the police stations. They kidnapped people. They launched commandos operations. But this ended. This all ended. Today, the Israelis, yes. Proof is that 12 years. People say, what's your proof? Look, we have proof. 12 years. 12 years have passed, and the Israelis who have the nature of assaulting and attacking, the Israelis who have this hostile nature, the Israelis who are always greedy, the Israelis who want our territory and want our water, don't have the courage to assault or attack our villages or our people or the sovereignty of our country. Who's protecting this country? This equation is protecting the country. It's not the United Nations which is protecting the country, nor the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, nor the Arab League, nor anyone else. What's protecting this country is this equation, the army, the people, and the resistance. And the resistance is part of this equation. So, this is the achievement. Then, we speak about the Israelis who always think of invading, who always think of attacking us, the Israelis who always open fire against us, the Israelis now, they are afraid of the fire from our side. They are afraid of being subject to fire or subject to the rocks. And so for this reason, they are building this wall on the border. We didn't take any stance with respect to the wall which is being built in Kfar Kila in southern Lebanon. But let me look at one angle of this. Let me say today that this wall is a signal. It's a signal of what we said ever since year 2000, what we've been saying until from the year 2000 until today. And I repeat once again that the withdrawal of the Israeli enemy from Lebanon on the 25th. of assaulting and attacking the Israelis who have this hostile nature, the Israelis who are always greedy, the Israelis who want our territory and want our water, don't have the courage to assault or attack our villages or our people or the sovereignty of our country. Who's protecting this country? This equation is protecting the country. It's not the United Nations which is protecting the country, nor the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, nor the Arab League, nor anyone else. What's protecting this country is this equation, the army, the people, and the resistance. And the resistance is part of this equation. So, this is the achievement. Then, we speak about the Israelis who always think of invading, who always think of attacking us, the Israelis who always open fire against us, the Israelis now, they are afraid of the fire from our side. They are afraid of being subject to fire or subject to the rocks. And so for this reason, they are building this wall on the border. We didn't take any stance with respect to the wall which is being built in Kfar Kila in southern Lebanon. But let me look at one angle of this. Let me say today that this wall is a signal. It's a signal of what we said ever since year 2000, what we've been saying until from the year 2000 until today. And I repeat once again that the withdrawal of the Israeli enemy from Lebanon on the 25th of May, year 2000, this, it hammered the last nails in the greater Israel. The 25th of May, year 2000, this so-called Greater Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates River, this Greater Israel and even the Medium Israel outside occupied Palestine historically, this project ended. It ended here in your territories, on the borders here, with your blood, the blood of your martyrs, with your perseverance and with your resistance and your heroics and your sacrifices. Israel, the project of the Greater Israel, always looked towards an expanded area, expanded territories, bordered by rivers, the Nile River and the Euphrates River, the Litani River, if we won't say the Owali River. And these rivers would be under the Israeli sovereignty, and its strategy is based on the fact that the strong Israel, which is capable, nobody would have the courage to live who lives outside the circles of the rivers, nobody would have the courage to throw a rock at Israel, let alone fire bullets. But today, on the Lebanese borders, there are people who are not only throwing rocks at the Zionists, not only people who are firing bullets at the Zionists, but they are also promising that rockets will be launched on all points, all areas in occupied Palestine. These walls, which began in the West Bank, and there is a strong relationship between the achievement of resistance in Lebanon and the achievement of resistance in Palestine. Look, after the Israeli withdrawal in 1985, we saw the first revolution, the first intifada in Palestine. After the liberation on the 25th of May in Lebanon, just a few months after that confrontation, and were it not for the international community and the Arab countries, etc., etc., and those who betrayed, were not for this, the Intifada would have achieved historic, would have made historic achievements. However, one of the achievements of this Intifada is that it imposed on the Zionists to build separation walls in the West Bank, and Israel began to withdraw. It withdrew from Gaza, it withdrew from South Lebanon, it withdrew in the West Bank, it began to build a separation wall. Now they're speaking about building a wall on the borders with Egypt, building a wall on the borders with Jordan. Okay, good. So the Greater Israeli project has ended. The borders of rivers has ended. They've resorted to the borders of walls, and the borders or the walls won't protect them. It won't preserve their existence, which is based upon stealing territories, massacres, assaults, terrorism, and greed. This is an achievement. This is also a great achievement. On this occasion, I'd like to remind you, of course, a lot was said at that time. A lot of high-ranking Zionist officials spoke in 2000, but let me give you one example for the sake of the time. He said that nobody, or that I, it never occurred to me, he said, it never occurred to me that I would live to see this day whereby the state of Israel and its army, which our enemies and our friends, the Arabs also helped in this description. I continue, the enemies and our friends, they describe this army as the invincible army. It never occurred to me that I'd be obliged to, that the Israeli army would be obliged to flee an Arab side. Look how he speaks in this way, an Arab side forcing us to leave, forcing us to flee. What happened? How did things happen in this way? Hundreds, only a few hundreds of fighters of Hezbollah forced the strongest state in the Middle East to be shown in this way of defeat. We always proved to the Arabs that they should not try to force us to make concessions to them by force, because in the end, the Arabs are the side who will make concessions. However, Hezbollah, and once again quoting Shamir, and the Lebanese resistance fighters, prove that there are Arabs of a different nature. In my nature, I am not one of those people who like to speak highly about anyone, but I also like to show my respect to those people who managed to fight against us in a level which shows a real level of challenge which was imposed on the state. This quote was a quote by Shamir, Ishaq Shamir. So here we have the enemy recognizing this achievement. And so today, the most important achievement on the level of the region, on the internal level, on the level of the south, on the level of the borders. When we speak about Lebanon, we speak about all of Lebanon. Baalbek, al-Hirmid was also subject to bombing before 1982, and after 1982, Beirut was subject to bombings. The north, the mountain areas, the central Bekaa, western Bekaa, no Lebanese territory was safe from Israel. The issue is very simple, in just a few words. The issue is that the resistance and the arms of the resistance, they are part of the equation which protects Lebanon and which confronts the Israeli threats and the Israeli assaults. And before I speak about the results, let me remind you that this resistance, it made all of these achievements, but at the same time there was conspiracy against this resistance. I don't want to create a problem with the Arabs, but there was Arab absence at that time. I don't want to say Arab conspiring. There was Arab absence, except Arab and Islamic absence, by the way, except for Syria and the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is something well known, which doesn't need any proof. And in Lebanon as well, there was an absence of the state authority, except in the final years before year 2000. But despite all this, we made this achievement. I don't want to speak of it more, but also never was there national consensus with respect to resistance. No, you can go back to the archives before the 25th of May. Even just a few nights before the 25th of May, some in Lebanon still spoke and spoke about the violence, politicians and on the media. They spoke about the cycle of violence in Lebanon. They didn't even recognize that it's resistance or legitimate fighting. They said people were killed, not martyred. They spoke about armed men, armed groups. They didn't describe them as resistance. So there was no natural consensus on resistance. No, with all due respect to those who say this, there was never natural consensus with respect to the resistance. There were always divisions in Lebanon. There was never natural consensus with respect to the arms of the resistance. There were always divisions. I find it strange when some Lebanese or when some politicians or when some media people say now natural consensus ceases to exist. But there was never natural consensus with respect to the resistance or its arms. There were always divisions with respect to this issue. There were two points of view. In light of these divisions, and in light of this Arab absence, in light of this international conspiring, despite all this, the resistance was able to make these achievements and achieve these victories. This is something which we must always remember when we speak of the achievement. Now, let me speak about the result. Today, in light of the spreading of arms which we witnessed over the past few weeks in Lebanon, there is a discussion in the country. People are saying, let's calm down. People are saying, let's calm down. We have a new file, which is the arms and the chaos of arms and the expanding of arms. Let's come and discuss this issue together with the arms of resistance, and let's put them in one package and call them the illegitimate arms, arms outside the state. And let's deal with this issue as one issue, as one package. This is a big mistake. It's not wise or smart. It's a big mistake for many reasons. The first one is that I'm speaking about the arms of resistance. I say this is its achievement. Its achievement. This is its cause. Tell me, speak to me about all the other arms, all the other arms, whether it be the arms which exist or which is possessed by March 8 or March 14. Or March 18, or whatever. March 8 or March 14. Nobody can say we don't have arms and it's too expensive. No, no. Don't speak in this way. Everybody has arms. Light arms, medium arms, heavy arms, and some unique medium arms and some expensive firearms. Tell me, all the other arms which isn't part of the equation of deterring the Israelis, all the other arms, what have these arms achieved and what is the cause of these arms? There is a fundamental difference between the two types of arms. This is one side. The other side is that we support accepting, and our conviction tells us there is a fundamental difference between these two. And when we opened the issue of the strategy of defense, national defense strategy, we weren't speaking about a national defense strategy for the army and one specific side in the resistance. No, we're speaking about the Lebanese people and the resistance. Anybody who wants to be part of this defense strategy, everyone who wants to take up arms to confront the enemy, to fight the enemy, that's good. We can all come together. We can put together all of our energy, all of our capabilities as part of a national defense strategy to protect our country. Look at our experience today when the Lebanese agree to our national cause and when they pursue all of their efforts despite their political differences, they can make achievements. The same goes here. Logic tells us that the result is not because of the chaos of arms, let's go ahead and cancel out the resistance and the arms of resistance. No, the correct equation is that because we have the chaos of arms in Lebanon, let's organize all of these arms as part of the equation of the army, people and resistance to protect the country and to protect all of our resources. Now here, let me speak about the internal situation. When we speak about this equation, I must differentiate, and let me be clear. I differentiate between the equation of protecting the country against the Israeli enemy and the equation of protecting civil peace and internal security and stability inside Lebanon. These are two different subjects, not one subject. They sometimes intertwine, but we can view them as two different issues, as two big issues. With respect to confronting Israel, very but we can view them as two different issues, as two big issues. With respect to confronting Israel, very frankly, our conviction, our vision, which is based on experience, which was successful in Lebanon and successful in Gaza and successful just months ago in Iraq and before that in Afghanistan, based upon our experience, based upon the logic of history, based upon the facts, based on the situation of the enemy and the capabilities of the enemy, Lebanon weak and its capabilities, we say that protecting the country, to protect the country, we need the equation of the army, people and the resistance, because we are face to face against Israel. Now, with respect to the internal situation, no. He who is responsible for security inside Lebanon, for internal stability, for protecting the Lebanese inside Lebanon, for protecting civil peace, is the state. The state is the only one responsible for this, via the Lebanese army and via the security institutions. Nobody has any responsibility in this issue except the state. Now, over the past period, some people might come and say that there are some areas. Let me be clear here. Some say that in southern Beirut there is some security problem. In Baalbek, some people have been kidnapped, things have happened, and sometimes in some areas we have robberies, and articles then hold us responsible for this security. But we said from day one, we don't take responsibility for these internal issues, for these internal security issues. The state must take the responsibility. In May 2005, I came, I said, we do not replace the political authority. We are not a project for authority. We are not responsible for the internal security, the state, the army, the police. They are responsible for this. My dear brothers, we the Lebanese, we lived through long experiences. We're not speaking theories today. In Lebanon, we witnessed civil wars. We're not reading this in books. Our graves are full of victims, and our memory is full of sad events. Let's not repeat what happened before. Our weapons are not there to protect a specific sect or a specific group. We call on the Lebanese state to protect all of these sects and all groups and all political factions. Our arms is to protect the country against Israel, and the state is responsible to protect the people inside Lebanon. It's responsible for the security of the people, internal security. Yes, the political factions are a partner. They must not incite, they must not open problems. The media is a partner. The media must not exaggerate the matters so people would not put up with one another. The podiums, the people who speak, the sectarian incitement. Security is not only a security operation, it's not only related to operations, it's a result of political efforts and cultural efforts, educational efforts, media efforts, and security efforts, and economic efforts. Everyone must play his or her role and take responsibility, so the situation in the country won't get out of control, so that the situation will remain stable, so that civil peace will continue and be firm. And so from here, we're very clear. We're committed to this. Now, some people say this is an allegation, a claim we're making. From here, I'd like to speak about a few points before I end. We say that the most important institution to protect this civil peace and to take up this job or this duty is the Lebanese army, together with the other security agencies. But the most important body is the institution of the Lebanese army. Let's be very frank with each other. In the south, in the north, in the Bekaa, in Beirut, in Mount Lebanon, we the Lebanese, my dear people, going back to a civil war, going back to kind of semi-autonomy, going back to sectarian areas, everybody loses in such a scenario. People will kill one another. You look at the ethical level and look at the cultural level, unfortunately, the low level. Today, the last guarantee, of course, there's something which is demanded, required before the end, on the political level, on the level of government, political factions, but the last guarantee which can protect civil peace in Lebanon is the Lebanese army. And so for this reason, we must preserve this institution, and we must protect it, and we must defend it, and we must defend its morals, we must defend its strength, we must defend its existence in the battlefields. We must defend its duty to play its roles, even if painful events occur. Now, you all know, on the 13th of August, of September, sorry, in 1993, it wasn't a mistake on a checkpoint. Under the bridge, the airport bridge, people were protesting and they were confronted by the Lebanese army and security services, and they opened fire against the protesters, and about 50 victims fell between martyrs and wounded. Some of them were brothers, siblings. Did we open fire against the Lebanese army? Did we take up arms against the Lebanese army? Did we demand for the Lebanese army to leave southern Beirut and from the outskirts of southern Beirut? No, we didn't. Yes, we said if there is a political decision, the Lebanese government must take its responsibility, and the army officer who decided to open fire must be investigated and held accountable. Every time something happens, they speak about southern Beirut. But those who killed our brothers and sisters near the airport, where are they? Where are they? Were they hanged? What life imprisonment were they given? Were they sentenced to life imprisonment? It doesn't need any investigation. It was clear. Now, after just a very short period, protesters were killed in Hayya Sallam in southern Beirut. They were killed by the Lebanese army. Did anyone in southern Beirut go and take arms against the army? Did they open fire against the army? Did anybody from southern Beirut kill anyone from the army or call for the army to withdraw? No. Just previously, a while ago, some people quickly set the example of Maram Kail. In Maram Kail, one area in Beirut, people were protesting and burning tires. Is this right behavior or wrong behavior? That's something else. But this doesn't allow them to be killed. However, they were killed. What happened? Yes, we condemned this. We denounced and we objected and we made speeches and we called for a trial, etc., etc. But what happened in the end? In the end, I'd like to say, in this perspective, that the incident which occurred in Aqqar in North Lebanon, which led to the martyrdom of Sheikh Abdul Wahid and Sheikh Mir'ib, may peace be upon their souls, this incident is a very painful, unfortunate incident which we condemn. But it is an incident. Let's put it in its appropriate perspective. We say investigation, judiciary, and accountability. This is the way to approach it. But the army must be protected, must be preserved for the sake of all of the sheikhs, for the sake of all of the martyrs, for the sake of all of the areas, for the sake of all of the Lebanese, for the sake of this country, for the sake of the safety and future of this country. This is a fundamental point which I wanted to speak of. Now, from here, I'd also like to say that the state must take its responsibility. Nobody wants to create a problem with anyone. Nobody wants to fight anyone. However, we must be vigilant when it comes to being dragged into any fight or any confrontation. Some people are pursuing their efforts to create fighting inside Lebanon. Now, security services arrested one person who was wanted. Why do we need fighting in Tripoli when such a person is arrested? Why do we need battles in Bab al-Tabani and Jabal Mahsin in Tripoli, in northern Lebanon? This is one question. Yesterday, what happened in Caracas, in western Beirut, the situation could have been dragged into a worse scenario. Before that, the events which happened in Tariq Jadid, also in western Beirut, nobody can say that the people or not the people. No, there are some political parties who take responsibility. For 8 hours, we had fighting and battles and confrontations in Tariq Jadid in western Beirut. Where was the state? Where was the state? Where was the army? I defend the army, but I also criticize the army. Where were the security services? This incident must not be repeated, because it could lead the country to very, very serious dangers. The officers and the political factions, whatever their affiliation, the state is responsible for protecting the political parties, and it's responsible to intervene. And the army and the security services must be given all the capabilities and everything they need. Everything they need, everything material, everything, in order to prevent completely prevent any confrontations, such as the confrontation we witnessed in Beirut. And I sincerely hope, I'd like to stress upon another point, my dear colleagues, let's speak about what happened on the ground. A few days ago, when I spoke on the occasion of reconstructing, of the end of reconstruction in southern Beirut, I'd like to say there are some political parties which are practicing incitement to maybe preserve their supporters, to gain supporters for the sake of elections. But let's be careful. Sectarian incitement is very, very, very dangerous. Sectarian incitement, we are all in the same circle. Sectarian incitement in this negative way means that if things will get out of the control of everyone. Whoever imagines that they can control what's happening on the ground and prevent a deterioration in the country or prevent a civil war in the country is mistaken. Now, 2 days ago, when I spoke in my name and in the name of Nabih Birri, we told the people to get away, to exit the streets, and they responded. It might happen once, time and again, but if I use sectarian incitement, the people then won't respond to me. They won't respond to anyone. And then the leaders become elements, and the elements on the ground become leaders. Some people say, you're people of culture, you're people who have education. Why do you speak in this way? They say, if we don't speak in this way, the street will neglect us. Who led the street to this situation? The political leaders, they led the street to this. So the biggest responsibility before we hold the government and before we hold the army and before we hold the security services, the responsibility of the situation, the political leaders and the media outlets, we also don't want media to create incitement. Let the news be news. Everybody must take their responsibility, and this incitement must stop, and these mistakes must stop. Otherwise, if we always make accusations based on sectarianism, well, where will the country go? With respect to the Islamist prisoners, for example, our stance from day one was that they quickly must be tried. The Islamist prisoners must be tried, and those who are not proven guilty must be freed. From day one, this was Hezbollah's stance. It is the stance of Amal movement, the stance of Nabih Birri, the stance of the Higher Shia Council. But then some people come and say that those who are preventing the trial of Islamist prisoners are the Shia. What kind of language is this? Now, ever since they were arrested, the Islamist prisoners, for years, the Prime Minister is from the Future Movement, the Minister of Justice is from March 14, and from the Lebanese Forces Group. What do we have to do with it? On the contrary, there were Islamist prisoners who were accused of killing me, and I said, I give up my right, and I call for them to be released. But in this unjust way, let me be frank here, we hold the Shia sect responsible for the continued imprisonment of the Islamist prisoners. This is unjust, misleading, and it's something unprecedented. And who